He's a pillar of community opinion.
The Rob Snow Show returns
on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM
and 1310 AM.
So we've been calling it call, click, and wait. Call, click, and wait. Hope, pray, call, click, and wait to try and get a shot. The vaccine scavenger hunt, the search for the shot. For the last few days, listeners have been sharing their experiences in trying to get a first dose of vaccine callbacks. And over the last few days, it's been story after story of frustration and the need for an awful lot of patience, an awful lot of legwork. So let's get an update on what it's like to be on the other side of the computer, the other side of the telephone, the other side of the counter at the local pharmacy. Sandra Hanna joins me this morning, a CEO, Neighborhood Pharmacists Association of Canada. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's a great pleasure. What would you hear? What are you hearing from your member pharmacies about the situation right now, say, with demand for vaccines?
Yeah, I think that the biggest story right now is that demand is far outpacing supply. And that's been the challenge in every single channel for the vaccine distribution and administration. And that's no different for pharmacies. There are 4,600 pharmacies across the province. Right now, just under 1,000 of them, or about 1,000 of them, are currently administering vaccines. That's as of last week. And the reason that it's, you know, just 1,000 out of all the pharmacies across the province who are willing and ready to step up to administer vaccines is because we just don't have enough vaccine to supply all of the pharmacies. So we're rolling this out slowly. Pharmacies across Ontario have the capacity to administer up to 1 million vaccine doses a week, and we just don't have that supply right now. In total, over the past 6 weeks, we've received about 500,000 vaccines over the whole six-week period between all pharmacies participating. So just to put into perspective that, you know, it really is a balancing act right now for pharmacies managing, you know, crazy amounts of demand, phones ringing off the hook, certainly long wait lists, people, you know, booking online. So their appointments are all booked up, and they have to work with the limited supply that they're being allocated and provided. And right now, pharmacies are just being provided the AstraZeneca vaccine, but we expect.
Could they accommodate the other vaccines, Sandra?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, we know that there's going to be a limited pilot that's rolling out imminently for pharmacists to supply and administer the Pfizer vaccine. And that's actually going to be, I think, a great opportunity for pharmacies, because that is the vaccine that we are seeing the most stable and secure supply of. And I think it's going to really open up a whole other avenue for pharmacies to be able to play a bigger and more expanded role in getting more shots in arms.
Okay, I want to get a sense about what's going on in the pharmacy and what it's like to try and schedule appointments, put people on wait lists, go through wait lists, call people back, book appointments. Can you give us a sense of what this is like for the neighborhood pharmacists right now, Sandra, what they're going through with trying to navigate all of this and accommodate everybody? Yeah.
And thanks for trying to shed light on this, because I think we think that we are going onto a booking portal and booking an appointment for, an unlimited amount of appointments or vaccines. But in reality, pharmacies are receiving vaccines in shipments of 100, 200 doses. And they're only, they're getting those shipments, not really knowing when their next shipment is coming in, not knowing when that shipment is coming in until the day before. So it's really difficult for pharmacies to sometimes book these appointments, and many times they're waiting until they receive confirmation of incoming supply before they open up their booking systems. So that's really challenging for pharmacies on the front line, and totally appreciate that it's challenging and frustrating for the public who are trying to book these appointments and secure a vaccine. But because of the instability of the supply, it's been a real challenge for pharmacies, because the last thing we want is to be booking all these appointments, not receiving the supply, having to rebook appointments, cancel appointments. So it is a balancing act on the front lines that pharmacies are having to manage, booking those appointments based on the number of vaccine doses and the timing of when they expect to receive those vaccine doses. And the additional component to that is that because of the challenge with booking, we're seeing a lot of the public booking several appointments at several different locations, putting themselves on several different wait lists. And so when we get to actually getting through those appointments, there are several cancellations, no-shows. And so pharmacies are left with vaccine that once that vial is punctured, you actually have a certain number of hours to use the vaccine.
It has to be used that day, right? It'll have to be used that day, you would think.
You got it. It depends on the vaccine. Some have slightly longer times than others. But yeah, you have a clicking time, right? So I think that's also one of the things that, you know, some people are talking about, well, how come I was on a wait list and somebody walked into the pharmacy? And it may just be that somebody walked into a pharmacy in that final hour where there were no shows. And, you know, certainly as a collective, as a population, the public does not want to be wasting vaccines. So it is a really delicate balancing act on the front lines between appointments, trying to call people in order, and just making sure we're not wasting a single dose of this vaccine that is in such high demand.
Okay. I'm going to play you a clip here. This is Ottawa Mayor Jim Watson expressing his frustration just yesterday about basically pleading with people, don't put yourself on 15 or 18 wait lists at pharmacies. Let's listen here.
If I could plead with members of the public, please do not go out and register 5, 10, 15 times with different pharmacies. It's clogging up the system. The system a lot of people find is very frustrating at this point, because there are different ways based on the different pharmacies how you get registered and whether you get notified in a wait list or so on. But far too many people are reporting back to me that they have individual friends who are booking one case in Manotick, 18 different pharmacies.
How common is that? Are you hearing that from your members?
Yeah, we are. We're hearing it from a lot, and it is a challenge. And it's an understandable thing to do when you don't know when you're going to get called and you're hoping that you're just going to, you know, get the first call that you receive and get that vaccine faster. However, it is challenging, because if you can imagine that, you know, you have a clicking time bomb, you want to make sure that you get that vaccine in an arm before it gets wasted, and you're calling people on your wait list and half of them have said, oh, I've already gotten my vaccine. And that's after, you know, a number of people who may have booked appointments at several places, because we're seeing that as well, and just not showing up. And when you call them, it's because they've gotten an appointment at another place. And again, this is all totally understandable because of the frustration with getting the vaccine these days. However, it is presenting challenges on the front lines. The one thing I would say is that we are seeing now, and you know, in Ontario, they've initially said that it was primarily all bookings, and we are seeing a lot more walk-in opportunities available. So I think there is an opportunity for pharmacies, most pharmacies are now enabling both appointments and walk-ins. So, you know, I'd say rather than putting yourself on, you know, multiple wait lists, I think call the pharmacy, see if they are offering walk-in opportunities, and that might be an opportunity as well for people to access the vaccine.
Okay. What is the current situation with the supply of AstraZeneca vaccine?
Well, that is a question that I don't have an answer to, Rob. I wish I did.
Right.
There have been a lot of challenges with the Moderna vaccine.
But I mean, is it running out? Are we running out? That's what people want to know. Are we going to run out, I guess?
Well, I think it depends on when the next shipment comes in. And that's something that is being coordinated between the federal and provincial governments. So we don't really have a line of sight as to when the next shipment is coming in. You know, at the moment, we still have some vaccines in store with the AstraZeneca. But as I said, we as an association have been pushing towards enabling pharmacies to have access to all the vaccines, so that if there is a challenge in supply with a particular vaccine, that doesn't eliminate the opportunity for those ready and able providers to be able to get those shots in arms, and it doesn't shut down that channel of immunizers. So as I said, we are going to be running a limited pilot over the next few weeks.
Okay.
With a Pfizer vaccine in pharmacy to really, it's a proof of concept, because we've done this in other provinces, and we're, you know, we have our best practices. We know what we need to do. So it's really a proof of concept. And then we hope that that'll then expand further to other pharmacies, so that, you know, if there is a challenge with AstraZeneca supply, well, we've got Pfizer, and that one we know we have much more stable supply of over the coming months.
Okay, I want to circle back to something you said earlier in our conversation. Your member pharmacies, you estimate, could do 1 million doses a week, you said, right?
Correct.
If you had the supply, you could do 1 million doses a week, which is about 140,000 doses a day.
Yep.
Okay. So for the last full day, full 24-hour period that we have data for from the Ontario government is about 116,000 doses.
Yeah.
So there is room. There's capacity
to
deliver the shots,
capacity.
But there are supply constraints.
Correct.
Clearly.
And that 1 million is just through the pharmacy channel.
Just through the pharmacy channel. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That doesn't speak to the other providers. And we know there's capacity there too, but we've got you know, great capacity just within the pharmacy channel. But as you said, you know, as a province, we were administering, and we're doing great as a province in terms of the vaccine supply we have. We've got lots of capacity. We just don't have the supply at this point. So we're ramping up, and as more supply becomes available, we've got providers, we've got channels ready to turn on and administer them and get them into arms as soon as we have the vaccine in province.
Okay. I thank you for your time this morning and the latest information from your member pharmacist. It's a great pleasure. And tell them to keep up the great work, okay? Thank you. We know
so
that
much.
It's a very busy time for them.
Thanks.
Sandra Hanna, CEO, Neighborhood Pharmacists Association of Canada. Are you going to be able to play golf this weekend? Lots of rumors. Nothing yet from the government, though. You know, they'd like to throw Ontarians a bone and open up a few more things like tennis and golf courses. Lots of rumors, but nothing yet. Adam Stanley writes about golf for the Canadian Press. He's the host of the Next Rounds on Me podcast, and he'll join me next here on City News.
He's the opinionated Ottawa icon.
The Rob Snow Show returns
on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
So there is some breaking news right now. This is the Minister of National Defense. This is Harjit Sajjan.
Conduct Response Center across the country, as noted in Budget 2021. This program will include both online and in-person group support, as well as an app that will connect members to confidential peer support 24/7. Anywhere across the globe. It will be designed and facilitated by professionals, clinicians, and people with lived experience, ensuring the best support is available. This funding.
So the
also
news that has come out of this already, this started about 5-10 minutes ago from the Minister of National Defense. It's all about sexual misconduct in the Canadian Armed Forces, at the allegations at some of the highest levels. And the defense minister has apologized to victims of military sexual misconduct who, quote, feel we were not there for them, And he has announced an independent external comprehensive review into harassment, sexual misconduct in DND and the Canadian Forces, and it will be led by former Supreme Court Justice Louise Arbour. So that is breaking right now, and we'll have more during our 11:30 newscast. This is City News, and this is the Rob Snow Show. Now, as you know, the golf industry shut down in the province of Ontario. It was part of the latest lockdown measures imposed by the Ford government. In a recent conversation that I had with Ontario Golf, the estimate is that 100,000 people are employed in the golf industry. It's not just golf courses. It's the It's the entire industry. It's golf instruction. It's tourism related to golf. 100,000 people employed in the industry, and it's a $3 billion industry in Ontario, and it's closed. But could it be open again? Could it be open as soon as this weekend? Lots of rumors to that effect, but nothing firm from anyone in the Ford government. Adam Stanley writes about golf for the Canadian Press, and he is the host of the Next Rounds on Me podcast. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, Adam. Thank you again for the time. What are you hearing? What do you know? Are people going to be playing golf this weekend?
You know, I'm probably leaning towards saying that they aren't going to be playing golf this weekend, and for a couple of reasons. I think most of the smoke that came this week on social media was certainly stemmed from the golf industry and golf course facilities themselves, and with reason. I mean, they don't want to be absolutely crunched by the tidal wave of people that want to book tee times as soon as the Ford government says, yes, go ahead, we can have golf back in this province. So one course starts to open up their tee sheet, then another course does it, a private one, a public one, et cetera, et cetera. And the next thing you know, they're all saying, hey, everyone's open their tee sheets for this weekend. We're going to go play golf or what? But again, this is now a politics thing. It's not so much a golf industry thing. And for me, as somebody who covers golf for a living, I have never been on more political hashtag threads or OPT mailing lists in my life. So at least as it stands right now, you know, we as in the golf industry as a collective are still waiting for the people who actually make these decisions. Those are the politicians to say, yes, you can go ahead, despite the fact that, you know, the science is on the side of the golf industry, the economics, as you had mentioned a few minutes ago, and just kind of the tugging at the heartstrings as well. You know, there's take the 15, 16 year old who's trying to save up for college or his first car or whatever it may be. And, you know, they can't work right now either.
Now, what do you make of the golf course that opened in Tilsonburg? Do you think that's a one-off? Is that course planning to do that again this weekend? What do you know about that particular course, Adam?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, Tilsonburg, the bridges at Tilsonburg, it's about 2 hours southwest of Toronto. They opened last weekend, defied the order, and they've basically been sold out ever since. You can't get a tee time there. Certainly as of just yesterday, I looked online, they were fully booked from Thursday all the way through until Sunday. That was the last day that was appearing on their online booking portal. So from what I understand, I spoke with the golf course a couple of days ago. They, as a facility, did not get fined. A golfer sent me a direct message on Twitter. He played on Sunday last week. He said he did not get fined, nor did the golfers on Saturday. So to your question specifically, is it a one-off? Yes, it's the only golf course, from what we understand, to have defied the order and opened. However, they have not been, I guess the word would be, punished by the OPP as it stands right now.
Okay. Is that a private course? Is it a municipal course? What do you know about it?
It's a public golf course.
Public golf course.
Yeah, public course. So people, who, no matter who you are, you can go online and book a tee time. And
pay your green fee and you're off. Exactly. Away you go. Yeah, okay. Yep. All right. Okay. And really no enforcement, right?
No, there was one OPP SUV there on Saturday, the first day, observing. That was the quote that they gave the local news station out there. Sunday, the golfer who played on Sunday, when he sent me that message, told me that he did not even see a police officer. The worst part about his day, he told me, was that he made a double bogey on the first hole as he was slightly nervous. But otherwise, no, he just said it was good to get out and play again.
Okay. I have to ask you, while I have you on the line, Brooke Henderson wins again. 10th win on the LPGA Tour. Put that into some kind of perspective for this 23-year-old phenom from Smiths Falls and what that means for Canadian golf, Adam.
Certainly from a Canadian athlete perspective, I would say she's probably the most underrated, despite the fact that she is already Canada's best golfer of all time as it relates to victories. If, you know, listeners are like, well, I don't even know who she is, I mean, that's tough to hear. But in the context of greatness in this sport, in this country's history, you know, the previous maximum wins by a golfer, PGA Tour, men's side, or LPGA Tour, was 8. And Brooke is now at 10. And like you said, she's 23 years old. So in the context of individual success in a sport in this country, the 23-year-old from Smiths Falls is better than every single other person in the history of the game from Canada who has ever teed it up at a pro event, which is pretty significant.
Where is she ranked on that tour? Is she like top five, or do you know her ranking? Or
fifth in the world, just as of her victory last weekend. So she's fifth in the world.
Fifth in the world. Wow. Incredible. Adam Stanley, I know you have your ear to the ground when it comes to the great game of golf in this country, and I thank you so much for taking the time for us this morning.
No worries. Hopefully we'll talk again soon, and I'll have some good news the next time we chat.
His podcast is called Next Rounds on Me, and he writes about golf for the Canadian Press. That's Adam Stanley. Coming up, more on paid sick days in Ontario, both sides of the issue. Rocco Rossi is the CEO of the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. He'll join me, as will Doris Grinspun, the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. This is the Rob Snow Show on City News.
Strong voice.
Strong opinions.
The Rob Snow Show returns on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
Let's get more reaction to the announcement from the Ford government today. Legislation to be introduced this afternoon on three paid sick days, temporary. The program would expire September 25th, and it's not the 10 paid sick days that have been called for by many critics of the Ford government. Rocco Rossi is here now from the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. Good morning, Mr. Rossi.
Hey, Robin. It's Rocco. Mr. Rossi's my dad.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, sir.
Yeah. No worries.
Yeah. What do you think about the announcement yesterday from Mr. Ford?
Well, I think what's important, people are focusing on the 3 days, but what's also on the table is effectively a doubling of the benefit of the federal program from $500 a week to $1,000 a week, and that's for several weeks, so well beyond the 10 days. All good programs need two things. They need the money, and then they need the mechanism, and the money is now there. I mean, the feds had originally put $5 billion for the sickness benefit program, and very little pickup because it is a difficult application process that happens after the fact, doesn't, you know, make it seamless for the employee, and was set at $500 a week, which is barely above minimum wage. So it left a lot of employees making the bad decision in the decision between doing the right thing for public health and putting food on the table for their families. So the 3 days is really to help in the bridge, but we need to have both levels of government at the table to fix the longer term piece in order to ensure that we get this right and we take away that horrible choice that many employees are being put in, and that is helping to fuel, and it's certainly one of the sources of the spread that we're seeing across the country.
So what then are some of the missing pieces? What are the missing pieces?
Well, one, it can't be an application process whose onus is on the employee after the fact. You want to have it seamless.
Okay.
I mean, one of the virtues of what the Ford government's 3 days is, look, the businesses will pay for the 3 days up to $200 a day based on the salary and wages of the individual employee. And then the company is going to be reimbursed. One of the things we want to be sure is that is speedy, because some of the programs and grant programs that the government is currently managing is not being reimbursed as quickly as our members and businesses would like.
Mm-hmm.
But two is bridging very quickly into the combination of the province and the federal funds, so that this isn't just a three-day program, but really will cover people seamlessly if they have to self-isolate because they test positive, or they have to be home because someone else in their family has tested positive. And so there isn't any temptation to continue to go to work and potentially to spread this virus further.
One of the worries that I have is when it comes to speed, expedience, this is, Mr. Rossi, Rocco, you know, this is not the reputation of WSIB that it works in any kind of speedy fashion on behalf of either workers or employers injured on the job. This is not the reputation that it has.
What we've seen, to be fair to all levels of government, because they've understood from the beginning of this process that the traditional ways of developing policy and passing legislation is kind of out the window. COVID is moving at a speed that has just said, look, you've got to be prepared to put your best idea forward and then to iterate based on, are you delivering or not? Is it solving the problem or not? And so you saw that multiple times. The wage subsidy program started at 10%, was not moving the dial, got moved to 75%. The rent subsidy program, initially offloading basically the management of this to landlords, totally inappropriate, and clearly wasn't getting pickup, resisted change for months, finally got changed to one where it's tenant initiated, which is absolutely the right place for it to be. So there are solutions available. A far easier one, given that employers have to send employee remittances back to the government, to the CRA, to both the provincial and the federal government for various things, why not simply allow them to subtract whatever the sick day is from that before sending the the remittances? There are other things that could be made faster, but the key is you've now put the money on the table, both the feds and the province, congratulate them for it, but now let's get the mechanism that will actually make this fast, that will actually help to solve the problem that we're trying to solve for.
What I know your members are placated somewhat that they will eventually be made whole as a result of this through the $200 a day, again, from the WSIB. But how precarious a position are your members in? How problematic would it have been had they had to pay, say, out of pocket, right off the payroll for this without being made whole?
I mean, this is something we've been clear from the beginning. We've called for paid sick days for the crisis, but that it had to be linked to the crisis and two, that it be government paid, because we've already seen tens of thousands of businesses in Ontario alone go bankrupt. Thousands more are hanging on by their fingernails. You know, I've had this discussion with a number of people say, well, you know, businesses should pay because Amazon is making a gajillion dollars. Well, I have 60,000 members in the province of Ontario, and 59,999 of them are not Amazon. So you can't do a one-size-fits-all. And look at the means test is taxation at the end of the year. Those who are going to make more are going to pay more. For right now, in the crisis, let's make it simple. It has to be government paid. I applaud that decision on the part of the government. And this isn't simply an ideological thing. It is a math thing, because it is interesting to note that British Columbia, which has an NDP majority government, has not mandated employer paid sick days, because it understands the math that not all businesses are created equal, not all have the same margins. And so you can't just holus bolus add costs and expect that they're just going to be able to suck it up.
Okay. What do you think about the expiry date? Some are calling for this to be a permanent program.
Again, I don't think you talk about permanent programs in the middle of a crisis. You deal with the crisis and then you have the conversation around what are priorities going forward. Clearly, as everyone of all political stripes has said, extraordinary times require extraordinary measures. No debate that we are in extraordinary times where getting this right has massive societal consequences, which we're living through. So let's take care of it now. If that September 25th has to be October 25th because of pace of vaccination, et cetera, I'm sure we can deal with that. But permanent is totally inappropriate at this stage.
I thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Stay positive, test negative, and get vaccinated just as soon as you can.
That's great advice. Rago Rossi, Ontario Chamber of Commerce. It's 11:42, and the developing story right now is that the Trudeau government is going to tap Supreme Court Justice Louise Arbour, former Supreme Court Justice Louise Arbour, to lead what it describes as an independent review of the military's handling of sexual assault, harassment, and other misconduct. This was announced earlier, just probably within the last 25 minutes or so, by the defense minister, Harjit Sajjan, and there is a news conference happening right now.
Programs, uniforms, recruiting, all the elements that go into making a member of the Canadian Armed Forces or a member of the Department of National Defense, and why abuse of authority continues to affect the institution this profoundly.
Follow-up, question two.
Yes, thank you. If I'm a victim who has suffered abuse in the military, why would I trust the sincerity of the words that you're speaking today when you note that the record is one of inaction?
And that is a very good point. Announcements don't make change. Our actions do. And this is what we are committed to doing. We have heard, as I stated, from survivors, we have spoken to many of the experts. It's what we put into place, the actions that we take, and the system that's going to be put into place will be determined by our survivors that come forward, a system that they can trust. But one thing for all the Canadian Armed Forces members and our survivors who are listening, you have an entire leadership. You have a government and the leadership of the Department of National Defense and the Canadian Armed Forces who are absolutely committed to this. As we stated, we will, all options are on the table. We will not leave any stone unturned, because at the end of the day, making sure that we have an inclusive environment that allows everybody to reach their full potential is the ultimate goal. We cannot rest until we have zero tolerance absolutely achieved. And the actions of the past and what they have seen, we regret that we did not have a system in place that supports them. But we are absolutely committed to doing this. And the work that you will see now is how we're going to build on those actions and regain that trust.
Okay, let's leave that. It's 11:45. That's a developing story, and we'll have more on it at noon during our noon newscast. This is the Rob Snow Show on City News.
The world is changing.
So keep up with Rob.
The Rob Snow Show returns on Rogers TV and City News, 101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
It's hard to keep up with the changes. Ford government has had a change of heart. It is now offering 3 paid sick days. The legislation was just tabled. The government wanted unanimous consent. Let's just pass it. Let's just pass it right now. That's not going to happen. The opposition to Democrats and Liberals do want to have a look at the bill. So 3 paid sick days. It's not the 10 paid sick days. It has an expiry date of September 25th on it as well. Let's get some political reaction from Doris Grinspoon, who is back, CEO, Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. Good morning and welcome back to the Rob Snow Show.
Thank you, Rob, for having us back. I was saying to your colleague that every time a nurse hears me in the radio, it energizes them to know someone is listening. So thank you for having us, because it's important for nurses to hear us in public, in the media. These 3 days, Rob, are, quite frankly, at this late stage in the game, a joke. I'm sorry to say that. You know that when people are sick, they need way more than that. They don't stack on top of the feds, right? So basically, it's kind of a little bridge until they get the money from the feds. So is it better than nothing? Of course it's better than nothing. Should have happened 15 months ago. In fact, you know, before the Ford government came to be, we had the 3 days. Those are 3 days that were negotiated by many of us with Kathleen Wynne. So we had the 3 days. The government.
I believe it was 2 days. I think it was 2 days.
Right away. But it's insufficient. It's insufficient in a time of crisis.
Why do you say that? It's insufficient. Why is it insufficient?
When a person is ill or isolating, and the many that we are losing because of that, these are people, this is for people that don't have benefits, right? This is for people that already are in precarious employment. They do not have the time to fill in forms. It needs to be an employer program. It needs to be permanent. And when people are sick, I hope you, when you're sick, you are home and stay home and are not spreading, you know, a virus. When I am sick, I stay home. Everybody else should have the right, human right, that when you're sick, you stay home. And then, and no one is going to take advantage. This thing of thinking that people just will take advantage is fantasy land. Because if a workplace is a decent workplace, people go to work, you know?
Yeah. Well, how will people know if it's fantasy land or not fantasy land, Doris? If you don't even need a doctor's note. You don't even need a doctor's note.
You are costing the system way more than the 10 sick days that we would give to people that are ill. And it's costing in lives. It's costing in nurses leaving the system because they cannot handle it anymore, the pressure that they're in. And it's costing people with cancer not having their surgeries because the system has canceled all their surgeries for not giving the 10-day sick time that people would have stayed at home in the first place and not being harming their own family and spreading the virus.
How much of this, because certainly Doug Ford is in the middle of a firestorm here, unlike any other provincial premier, and there are only two other provinces that offer paid sick days.
But look at other countries. Look at other countries. Look at California. Look at New York. 2 weeks, no questions asked. So, I mean, let's not look at the fact that in a country as rich as Canada,
right,
we act with universal healthcare, we say, but if you're sick, you need to go to work. You know what I mean? It makes no sense.
Well, I don't know. You know, we could pick and choose and metrics. You know, do we want to compare Ontario to New York? Do we want to compare Ontario to California on any other kind of data set? And I don't know how we would stack up one against the other. But okay,
now.
But when it comes to paid sick days, my point is, how much of this blame really rests with Doug Ford, and how much of it is Mr. Trudeau's fault?
Well, Mr. Trudeau
came up with this program to his government, Canada Recovery Sickness Benefit. It's $500 a week for a 1 week period, and then if it lasts more than 1 week, and you want it to last more than 1 week because you're calling for ten paid sick days, you need to apply again. And then it could last for a total of 4 weeks, but you need to keep applying. You need to keep applying.
I totally agree with you that it should have been made easier too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But more of a reason why we should get going here. The ones that have the problem is us. We have received money, so much money from the feds, rightfully so, because we needed that. The entire country needed that. Now is our time to put the money from our taxes to actually help the most vulnerable so they can protect their families, and also by doing that they protect the health system because the virus is not being spread. Let me also tell you that nurses that work as self-contractors that work in several hospitals in the ICUs, and there are many of these nurses that work for agencies, they're not getting this money either because you need to be an employee, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is also an issue, because as we speak, we have nurses leaving the system. It's much easier.
So you have, I'm sorry, Doris, just so I understand.
Or do contact and case tracing in a public health unit than working in an ICU.
I'm sorry, just so I understand, and so my listeners understand, there are nurses who are working in our healthcare system who are basically...
with no benefits.
They're self-employed? No. Like self-employed nurses? Is that what you're saying? Or
self-employed nurses that work in various hospitals when hospitals have a shortfall and they have expertise in ICU or expertise in emergency room, and then the hospital calls these agencies, many of them are without benefits.
Okay. I want to ask you... What you want the Ford government to do with this program? I mean, it has a majority government in at the Ontario legislature, as you know. You want it increased, right, to 10 days, and you want it made permanent. Those are the two big things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Because this is not only during a crisis. Now it's a disaster because the ICUs keep having more and more people, right?
Yeah.
But this is in general a problem. When people go to work sick, whether it's in the flu season or whether it's with other issues, it does not contribute to a healthy work environment, and it actually costs the system more at the end of the day. It costs people, it costs their families, right, the hardship of that, because they go to work sick, because otherwise they cannot put in on minimum wage food on the table. And on top of that, it costs the health system, because if you let things linger, then there is complications and it costs to the system way more. So we are paying the money anyways. We are just paying it in healthcare services, right?
Okay. I you know, we see these reports, healthcare workers from the Red Cross, healthcare workers from the armed forces, healthcare workers coming to Ontario from Newfoundland. There are also stories about nurses who are leaving the profession.
And there is also, and no one is mentioning that we brought, you know, I was watching the National the other day when we were all clapping to the 9 people that came from Newfoundland, right?
Yeah.
3 dogs, 5 nurses, 5 RNs, and 1 NP. And I was clapping too because, you know, beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I thought, who is clapping to the 400 nurses, RNs, that came back from their retirement as we speak, Rob? And we sent, RNs sent to hospitals. No one is, not even in the media. Who is clapping to my colleagues, nurses, RNs, and NPs that are in the ICUs, seeing horror, Rob, seeing horror, entire families, okay? Who is clapping to them to say thank you that you're there? This is why they're leaving, Rob. They're not being valued and recognized, and they don't see the help coming in ways that are tangible and vocal. I just spoke with the minister's office about that. I think this, why is it that in the first wave, Rob, in the first wave we gave $4 extra? I am not the, you know, we are not the union, we're the policy arm. We deal with policy. But why is it that in the first wave and second wave we gave $4 per hour extra to all the workers because of what was going on in nursing homes, remember?
Yes.
And now we are not giving $4 to all the nurses, RNs, and respiratory therapies that are working.
When it's as bad as it's ever been. Doris, we have to run. I thank you for your time again.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Doris Grinspun of the RNAO. That's it. Back tomorrow. Friday free-for-all tomorrow. This is City News.
The Rob Snow Show.
Weekdays 9 to noon on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
Number 1 for local news in Ottawa and the Valley.